Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567, or email us, feedback@doubletaponair.com.
And we are talking Windows. Sean Priest, we're talking Windows.
I love Windows when I'm talking Windows.
Ah, when I'm washing Windows. Ah.
All right, calm down.
Okay. I get into the old Cockney spirit every so often. Apples and pears.
George Formby was Lancashire.
George Foreman?
Cockney. Oh, forget it. I love his grill.
So do I.
Nice teeth. Okay. Wow. Weirdest start to a segment ever.
Welcome to Tangents with Sean and Stephen. with us today to talk Windows, someone who we've wanted to get back on the show for so long, and I'm so glad to say he's back with us. Robin Christofferson's here. Lord Robin.
Hello.
Lord Dr. Robin.
I was desperately trying not to laugh then because I hadn't been introduced yet. So, hello.
Well, such a professional. Such a professional. How are you doing, Robin?
Really good. Really good. Glad to be back. See, you've tidied the place up. That's good.
Yeah. Well, I have. I did all the work on it. I've got to say, he did nothing. I just want to be very clear on this. He did nothing.
I did the heavy lifting. He did the dusting. Everything's great.
Nice.
That is actually probably true. I'm that kind of guy. I do like to do a bit of dusting. I like dusting. I like things to be clean. Because do you ever do that thing when you're cleaning? Because blind people do cleaning differently. We do. We do cleaning differently because we do it by touch.
Oh, we do.
We very feel tactile. If it's clean.
As soon as I walk in that kitchen and I feel those sides, if they're even slightly crusty, that's it. It's a disgrace.
And
the kids
true.
Always say, well, uh-huh. It looks clean. Oh, well, uh-huh. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
We've got counters that are kind of speckly and marbly. And yeah, mm-hmm. I think they don't show up the dirt. So yeah, you can tell. There's a bit of texture there. Got to take it off.
Exactly. That's how you know. Anyway,
double
we're talking
tap cleaning.
Let's not talk surfaces. Let's talk. Actually, do you know what? We could talk surfaces because there's a surface event coming up. Oh, there we go. Oh, I'm applauding myself on that one. I'm giving myself that one for applause. So the surface event is happening today. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow. But I want to talk about Windows more generally because I feel, Robin, I know you catch bits of the show as you go along because you're a very busy man. But we've been talking a lot about the Mac. And that's fine, but I think we should also remember there are people out there who sadly do still use Windows. I'm only kidding, Windows
the
people.
Majority.
I'm just kidding.
Yes.
But yeah, lots of people are using Windows. And I was talking on the show the other day about what I feel is some kind of small exodus towards the Mac. Because it feels, to me anyway, as if I'm seeing a lot more people than I've seen in a long time talk about the Mac as in, hey, let's try this out. Let's move to the Mac. Now, you did the opposite. You had a Mac, which you primarily used on Windows, because everyone knows the best way to use Windows is on a Mac. And you decided to just give up entirely on that, or was it your work, I think, that might have decided, your office maybe said, you've got to do this. And you got a new PC, and how's it been? How's Windows 11 been for you? Because you hadn't used Windows 11 either, had you?
I was going to say beautiful, but only when I made it look like Windows 10. So basically,
visually,
well, that right click menu is what Sean kindly helped me put back. There's a registry key which you can do if you want to kind of hack. If you're that way inclined, then you can make Windows 11 right click menus, you know, Shift F10. I haven't got an applications key on this lovely Mac keyboard that I'm using here.
Really? Oh, you're still using the old Mac keyboard?
Oh, yeah. Love it. Absolutely love it. Magic keyboard. Work got rid of all of the Macs at work, and there were a lot of unhappy people. For me, using both the Mac and, you know, Windows in a VM, I felt like was best of both worlds.
Yeah.
But have I missed the Mac side? No, not at all. There's nothing that I needed to run. I wasn't needing to use like Rogue Amoeba software or anything like that. So I haven't missed anything. And like you said earlier, I used to sort of live 95% of the time in the VM anyway. So, you know, running Windows. So, I'm using Windows. The keyboard still has the Alt and Windows keys switched around. So nothing's changed there really, because that's what it's been like for me in the VM for years now. Windows 11, a little bit getting used to maybe. I like the fact that when JAWS stops talking sometimes, which it does, A lot of the time, actually, you know, particularly when you've had to bring up the user access control to, example, run a JAWS update, and then anything behind that user access control doesn't seem to talk with JAWS, which is a bit weird. I haven't got to the bottom of that. Bit ironic when it's a JAWS update that you're running. But when you run Narrator, I think that's probably the biggest difference between 10 and 11 is the cloud voices, the new natural voices in Narrator. Oh, they are so good. And Narrator is really quite powerful these days. I don't know if you've kind of tried to drive with it.
Oh, but, lots to dig into here. Yeah. Lots to dig into in this. Because I must admit, Narrator is, it always has been this of number three in the list of screen readers for a lot of people, right? Because most people in a work are using JAWS. At home, a lot of people have realized the power of NVDA. And I've often said that I think that Narrator in some ways has never really had the chance to get the spotlight or ever even get the sunlight on it to grow because everyone's too busy using everything else. So you don't really hear much about Narrator. So what's your experience been of that? How have you been using it?
Really powerful. And in recent versions, they've actually mapped most of the JAWS keystrokes, well, a lot of the core JAWS keystrokes. So that has made it really comfortable. You know, if JAWS isn't working, you fire up Narrator, Control, Windows, Enter, and you can use all the same keystrokes for just normal driving of JAWS, right down to sort of, you know, insert F12 for the time or date and that sort of thing. It automatically goes into scan mode when you're in an HTML, like a web page, for example. Yeah. The keystrokes are pretty similar there as well. It just feels really mature. Yeah. I would probably also, for the European and maybe rest of the world listeners, flag Supernova as well, not North American. I don't think it really registers over there, but certainly I think a lot of people might be saying, what about Supernova? You know, which used to be HAL before it got combined with the magnification software as well. And yeah. That, particularly in Eastern Europe, where I don't think there are still many Eastern European language synthesizers that JAWS or Narrator support. So, yeah, Supernova as well. But no, Narrator, definitely a mature screen reader now, definitely.
Well, okay, I will agree with you. I think the natural voices of Narrator are amazing. I love them. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Now, why they're not available system-wide, that's another discussion. But still, absolutely fantastic. And Narrator is very, very usable now. Sometimes I forget that I'm using Narrator other than, you know, the voice. Because, as you said, the keystrokes are very similar. So you can forget. I have noticed, though, for example, if you go to a browser, open up Edge, do Control-L to jump to the address bar, you try typing as quick as you do using JAWS or NVDA, and it will get lost. It's still a little bit sluggish for me, Narrator. I need to slow down, let it go into scan mode off or scan mode on. Mm-hmm. I need to wait for it, and I still find that slightly annoying, but I totally agree with you. I mean, it is a viable option now. I think when I've set up a machine before where I haven't even bothered to install anything else for a few days. I've just been using Narrator, and it's absolutely fine. It just still slows me down a little bit.
And you're probably running it on quite a beefy machine, aren't you? So it's it's not the hardware. Okay. Yeah. No, I think it's really, really good these days. Such a massive jump. And why that's not been made available in Windows 10, I don't know. I'm sure there's no technical reason. I feel like that's a differentiator between the two that they shouldn't have imposed. Because this is access, you know, and loads of people don't want to go to Windows 11. They put in that artificial hardware requirement that you need that special security chip to run Windows 11. I think they've relaxed that a bit now. But there's going to be loads of low vision or blind people using Windows 10 still that are having to settle for the older version.
I wonder if there's still that website running where you just have to tick a tick box saying I'm disabled and you can get Windows 11. Do you remember that website?
Yeah,
well, that's right. But it's interesting you guys talking about Narrator, because I haven't noticed that issue at all. I've noticed it be fairly swift. In fact, quite impressive, actually, in comparison to previous versions, which, you know, I think that's the truth of Narrator, is that it's a kind of a hidden secret. And, you know, you bring such interesting perspective to this, because there are many parts of the world, Robin, that just can't access anything else. And, you know, for language reasons and everything else. I'm glad you brought up Supernova. Does anybody, I mean, I'm not saying does anybody use it, because of course people use it. I know lots of people use it. People tell me in emails that they use it, but it doesn't seem to get the kind of cachet that everything else does. We never seem to talk about it in that broader context. And I don't know why, because it's a very powerful piece of software.
Yeah, it is. And going through specialist education, you know, if you went to a special school, chances are they were going to be using it in the UK and Europe because of the, you know, preferential pricing. So that was definitely, you know, what you'd have kind of been brought up on. But then going into a corporate environment, and you may well have been able to request and get Supernova, but a lot of IT teams just sign off certain assistive technologies, and JAWS would be the screen reader that they would have signed off. So you'd have to move over to that, you know, regardless of your preference. So yeah, I feel like JAWS, I mean, if you can move over, sorry, Dolphin, I think that there's a lot of power in doing that, because there's so many keystrokes that JAWS has. You know, if you are in any application, particularly Office or Teams or Edge, and then you do that insert W, that brings up dozens and dozens of JAWS specific keystrokes for that application that will give you all the information that you need. And those have all been, you know, scripted, added on to make that speak super well. And those kind of efficiency savings are what you need. You know, I couldn't use Excel without half the keystrokes to kind of know what's going on at any given time, monitoring different row and column headers, reading comments, etc., you know, editing the formulae and stuff. So yeah, really, really powerful. And you wouldn't get that in Supernova, for example, and certainly wouldn't get it in Narrator.
And this is why I think it's so important that we talk to you about this, because you're using, let's be honest, you're, unlike Sean and I, you're actually using the computer for things other than just, you know, oh, look, I can get onto Twitter. You know, and I think that's, am I right, Sean? He's not talking to me.
No, it's called X. It's called X.
Oh, sorry, yeah. Sorry.
I thought he was going to say, how dare you?
He knows I'm right. He knows I'm right.
No, but you are absolutely right. You're using it more, well, as people in employment will use it, yeah, using Office apps and things like that.
Which is where JAWS comes in. No, neither am I. But that's where JAWS comes into its own, right? And I think that, I'm not going to go down this route too much today, but I want to ask you just this one question, which is, in a world where you have NVDA, you've got Narrator now sort of coming up on the inside, as it were, you know, for home users who might have to pay, well, who would have to pay to use JAWS, is it worth it today? Are there enough viable options?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say no, not unless you wanted to use Office, for example. That might be a case where JAWS would help, but I mean, how expensive is JAWS, and it's an ongoing cost. So you'd really need to have those efficiency gains. You could get to all the information with NVDA, I'm sure. And the majority of the stuff would kind of speak well out of the box. And there are some cases where NVDA is actually ahead of the game. You know, you guys had that ChatGPT integration. Admittedly, you had to go and get a key. You know, you had to set up the API yourself. But, you know, that those sort of cutting edge things come from the NVDA community before they're rolled out in JAWS. So
I do think the add-on store has been a major, and I know add-ons have been around forever with NVDA, I know that, but bringing the store in, I think, just made it much more consumer friendly. You know, for me as someone who was fairly new to NVDA and felt like the add-on thing was like some exclusive community, bringing the add-on store in just brought all that in. And I think the implementation of it could do some work. But
yes,
yeah, that's the only thing, isn't it? But other than that, I think everything is good on that front, and I like it. But to be fair to Freedom Scientific, one thing I will say, and I know they would say this to us, is that if you're in North America, for example, you can get that home user license, which is much cheaper. Here in the UK, we don't have that option yet. That irritates me. But if you wait until, say, June, July time, around the Site Village time of year in the UK, that Site Village being the exhibition that takes place every year, when it gets to Birmingham every year, that's when a lot of these tech companies tend to drop their prices. And what I managed to do one year, and I think you can do this each year, is you can kind of, if you're willing to pay up front, you can get like 3 years worth of JAWS for the same prices as you would pay for it in America or Canada on the home user license. It's the same price, but the difference is they're paying for every year, a single payment per year, whereas you'd pay 3 years up front. So that's one way of doing it. is expensive, but it's a way of getting it. So if that's another option, if you, instead of paying the full whack price, which you could pay elsewhere in the year.
Yeah, it seems to be a postcode lottery, as we would call it, where, depending on where you live in the world, you know, in some countries, they actually have a country license. So the government bought a license for the whole country. Right. And in other countries, like in America, then you can get it on a kind of a, you know, lease arrangement. So, yeah, it's such a shame. And, you know, if you're in employment, then there's access to work, although that's barely scratching the surface here in the UK. It's just a drop in the ocean. But so, yeah, there seems to be a lot of variability. And, you know, I think you guys had a chat with Matt Ater about this, that the reason why the home license agreement isn't in other countries is the kind of variability of the local supplier.
It's up to them, yeah. It's up to
and
the
whether they
suppliers.
Fancy the idea or not. So,
and I don't know why they don't. I don't know why they don't. I do know the reason. I think it's partly because they fear the companies will opt for that license under the guise of a home user as opposed to paying the full price. But there's surely got to be some workaround for that. I don't know what that would be, but there must be some way of doing that. Anyway, that's a conversation for another day. Let's talk about Windows. Let's talk about Copilot, because everyone seems to be loving Copilot. All my sighted friends will never shut up about it. But my question is, what is Robin Christofferson thinking about Windows Copilot?
Okay, that was the keyword, Windows Copilot, because there are dozens of Copilots. So the one that sits in your taskbar and that you can do with Windows C. I love my keystrokes for, you know, driving Windows. I feel like there's many more of them than there are on the Mac side, guys. But anyway, so yeah, Windows C, if you have a newfangled laptop with a Copilot key, which controversially is replacing the right applications key. So you'll be forced to do Shift F10 or something fancy with key remapping with sharp keys or something. So yeah, you can very easily bring it up. It's basically a browser window and you can read all the contents in there. The main thing you're after is an edit box where you can pop into forms mode or go out of scan mode. And then you can type a question, a prompt as it's called, and hit enter, and then it'll give you the answer, and it speaks the answer out to you, and it comes at the bottom of the HTML window, as it were. So if you want to go and find it, you can go to the bottom, and it's nice and accessible. I wouldn't say it was kind of polished from a usability point of view for us screen reader users, but it's basically using ChatGPT 3.5, I think, which is a slightly older version but a lot cheaper to run. And obviously this is free for everyone to use, so I think Microsoft are trying to keep down their costs. But I find it really useful. It's supposed to, because this is Windows Copilot, integrate and do some clever things for you in the OS, like turning on dark mode and stuff. But it's very limited in that respect so far. They're talking big, and they're saying it's going to be, you know, much more powerful, so that you don't have to, you know, go looking in the system settings app. Although that's actually really quite good these days. I would just do a search at the top, like I would in most apps, Office apps, for example. Just use that search box at the top and don't even go anywhere near the ribbon. It's supposed to be a lot more powerful in that regard. But the sort of things that we're all using ChatGPT for, generating content, doing web research, it will give you all of the sources that it's gone away and used as a series of buttons that you can find out more information if you want to follow those. But no, I think it's really good. The other co-pilots, I think, have got a lot more potential, but they're not part of Windows. They're kind of tied to the different Microsoft apps, and we could talk about those. But yeah, I think anyone that's used ChatGPT or, you know, Gemini, which used to be Bard, or any of the other ones, I think will know what sort of things you could use it for. But over and above that, where it's trying to do things on your behalf in Windows, it's not any great shakes at the moment, but let's watch that space.
So what are you using it for then at the moment? Are you using this as a sort of replacement? Because right now, if I want to find out anything, straight to the browser, straight to Google, which is my homepage anyway, and yeah, you type in your question, right? So as Copilot replaced Google for you as the first place you go to look something up?
It depends. No is the answer. It depends what you want to do. If you want to just get a summary and you know that you'd go and have a look in a number of different websites to find out the answer, because it's like, what are they all saying? What's the landscape when it comes to, you know, AI and its application to for people with disabilities, for example? I have to write a blog post on that soon. You know, that's not just one website, is it? That's loads. So just bung that question in Windows Copilot. But I would equally go to, you know, chat.openai.com, for example, or some, you know, other website that has got extra functionality. So I might go to one of those instead. You know, I don't think it's 4 or 4.5, Windows Copilot. So it's probably not going to give you as good answers. But yeah, I would use it for that sort of thing, not just for kind of finding out a particular website that I would then go to and read that website.
I've got to ask you about the everyday stuff. The things I hear about, the things that I hear people complain most about, File Explorer, which seems to have kind of taken on a life of its own in terms of the structure. I mean, it used to be quite a simple thing to move around. I mean, we used to make the joke about Apple's Finder, which is the equivalent of File Explorer, of course. And for a lot of people, that was out of reach. And it certainly was for me for many, many years until I kind of figured it out. But it's not easy. No, and it's not easy. It really isn't. And, you know, if you do find it out, it's because you've really worked at it. And you shouldn't have to work as hard as we do.
You didn't work at it, Robin, is what he's suggesting.
Yeah. No, but honestly, you shouldn't have to.
I didn't get there. Stephen's obviously a pro.
I never got there either.
I don't understand why you have to hold down about three keys to get to one thing. So, for example, I mean, I love the fact that when you want to get to the applications folder, it's Command Shift A. And if you want to get to, you know, desktop, it's Command Shift D. Okay, that kind of makes sense. But then if you want to go to the downloads folder, it's Command Option L. Okay.
For loads. Yeah.
For loads.
Obviously.
Yeah. You just think there's some things that don't make a heck of a lot of sense. And, you know, moving around, I mean, although I will say this, and I mentioned it before, and I get a lot of emails from people saying, thank goodness we found this, but Windows Spots now in the new macOS Sonoma, what a difference. It has changed everything for me, just being able to navigate around parts of the screen that I could not access before. So, yeah, really, really improved with Windows Spots. That's the way to move around. But I want to ask you about File Explorer. I want to ask you about Outlook as well, because there's talk of it changing. In fact, I think it has changed, hasn't it, to some kind of web-based view.
There is a version, yeah.
Have you tried that?
No, I haven't, but there is a, you know, rumour that they're going to make people, you know, they're going to replace the normal one. And when that happens, I'm going to retire.
Yeah, that's the best approach, I think.
Now, you laugh at that, Stephen, but, I mean, there's a lot of worry.
Yeah,
there's a lot of worry out there about this. Yeah. I mean, we've had emails about, you know, the problems people are having with this web-based move that we're having, Gmail and Outlook. I mean, it is an issue.
Yeah, imagine, I don't know if you guys ever use Gmail in a web page,
no,
in a browser, but that to me would be a nightmare. And I know you had a contributor coming in about that and saying, you know, how challenging the new interface, the updated interface was.
Yeah, she's having issues.
I wanted to ask Sean, or I wanted you to ask Sean on that episode, Sean, what do you use for your mail every day in Windows? Because I don't Because the mail...
No.
Because if you're not using Office, the mail client on Windows isn't great. So I could imagine that he is having to go to Gmail on the web because the built-in one isn't great.
I use Outlook and whatever comes with Windows when you install it. I don't go off and install Office 365, even though I am a subscriber for some reason. For the rest of the family, I think. So I do use Outlook. I have, for the longest time, I was using Windows Mail. I thought it was fine. I mean, it's not the most advanced email client out there. But I've got to say, on Windows, I think we're slightly struggling for email clients. I mean, I tried Thunderbird for a while. That crashed a lot for me. As you say, Windows Mail can be a little bit annoying to navigate around, and particularly if you're deleting if you're trying to edit an email you're writing, I find it wouldn't speak out what I was deleting. That was annoying. Outlook I find a little bit cumbersome, but it is the one I am using by default. And I've got to say, all of the email web pages you go to, for the longest time, I've been with Hotmail or Outlook now for, 25 years or something, and it was always such a pain to navigate. So any web page where there's so many bits of information you're trying to get around, I find a struggle. So I am totally aware of that. And after we got that email from Shazad, I did go to Gmail and take a look. And it's just so much more cumbersome than it needs to be, right, for a screen reader user.
Absolutely, yeah. And the applications mode, which is what JAWS tries to put you into to make a web page, well, a web application feel like a desktop application, has its drawbacks as well. Teams is another example where it's basically an HTML. It's a web page,
yeah.
But never be in the kind of virtual cursor. Don't treat it as a web page. Treat it as an application. Use Tab and Shift Tab and F6 and stuff like that. And there are quite a few built-in keystrokes for Teams as well. But yeah, they're all moving towards this kind of HTML environment, and it's worrying. It is worrying. Oh, not retiring.
is this partly, do you think, why some people are looking to the Mac and thinking maybe there's some hope over here?
If you do think about it, then have a test drive of it, because boy, I feel like it's got a steeper learning curve, and it doesn't feel like it's been built for to be driven from the keyboard like natively. I feel like there's too much multi-finger, twister
gymnastics.
That game.
Yes.
Yeah. and some weird keystrokes that you've kind of hinted at. It doesn't feel as native a driven experience, and that I always found a little bit disturbing. When I'm in Windows and I know all the keystrokes I need, I feel like I'm playing an instrument. I absolutely love it. I feel like I can really rock. And now that I've got a machine that is modern, I mean, the other one was brilliant, but all of the resources were halved because of the VM. So it always felt fine, but this is, no waiting at all. So it really feels like you can just fly, basically, if you know what you're doing. And obviously, I would fully admit I've, had a lot of experience been using Windows since the 80s,
yeah,
when Windows 3.11.
Wow.
Came out. So a lot's changed, obviously. I would say not for the better, really. But something like File Explorer, which has now got a kind of an HTML pane in it as well, I would just ignore. So I would never fire up, Windows Explorer necessarily with just Windows key and E. I would, I have on my desktop about 50 odd shortcuts to folders and web shortcuts, etc. So all the web pages I would normally go to, I would just have a hotkey assigned to the shortcut, and it would go straight to that web page. So I wouldn't have to mess around in, going up to the browser bar at the top and putting in the address. Ditto with File Explorer. Every folder I use regularly, I would just do the hotkey, and I'd be dropped straight into the list of files and folders. And I don't even use the thing to the left, the folder tree view. I don't use anything else apart from just the main area.
That's the most important. There's only two things you need to worry about in File Explorer. That's the tree view and the item view. That's it. Everything else you just keep tabbing until you hear tree view or item view.
Or
F6, yes. That's right.
If you're going backwards and forwards in the folders, then backspace will take you back a level. So you don't have to kind of go into the folder system for that. And if you've got hotkeys to take you to the folder that you want, then yeah. But I mean, the tree view is fine. The tree view's the same.
That's a cool thing, actually, the fact you can set a shortcut onto a desktop file and it can take you straight to that file, or it can take you straight to that application. That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. You can do all that kind of stuff in the Mac as well, but it's a bit different in the way they do it. It's quite specific to the individual item, which I quite like on that. It's funny because we have this conversation about Windows and Mac, and we talk back and forward. You mentioned Dolphin earlier, and I think there are other options out there like this, but the one that makes me think, for people who are starting out or who want to use a computer but are just finding all of this too much to bear, I think about Dolphin Guide. Now, Dolphin Guide is a very simplistic, arguably, layout where you basically work off a list, a very kind of iPhone-like approach to things. And it's just a big list of items. Mm-hmm. You've got email, you've got internet, you've got contacts, you've got, you know, online radio, books, that kind of thing. You can access all of that via a very simple layout. You don't have to go into a Windows operating system or a Mac operating system. You can just live on this screen. And I think for a lot of people who are kind of struggling with Windows and Mac, and you know, they've maybe known Windows, but they're struggling with it. The idea of moving to Mac is just too much to bear. There is that third option. And again, it's good to try these things out. I have to be honest, there have been times where I've felt myself, I could just happily live inside that world. You know, I know exactly where I am. I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't have to worry about the outside world. I can be in my little, you know, internet shed, quite happy.
I mean, it's just like the blind shell. It's like any of those specialist products. It's brilliant in there. Come in, the water's lovely. Yes. But as soon as you bump up to the side and you can't do something that you really need to do.
That's the problem, yeah.
Yeah, but no, you're absolutely right. And if your computer has got an infrared sensor like the Mac Mini does, then you can use a remote control with it as well. They supply you with a remote control.
Yeah.
So you can drive it all from this remote and never have to touch the keyboard. And, you know, you can listen to your audiobooks. You can, I mean, I suppose you'd have to use your keyboard to reply to email and stuff like that. But yeah, it's really nice product.
I think people just tend to write it off because it's, and maybe I did as well for years. I just kind of wrote it off because I was thinking, well, it's too simplistic. But actually, for a lot of people, if that's all you need it for, why use anything else? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good to know the options. Robin, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been really interesting. I'm looking forward to the Surface event later. You should join us for it, and we catch up on that again at some point. I'll be interested to hear what the hardware announcements are. I mean, it's going to be new laptops and tablets, right? But, of course, they're all going to have AI built in, because that's the future.
Hooray!
Everything's got AI built in. AI for you, AI for you, and AI for you. Robin, thank you, as always. Not for you. But, Robin, thanks so much for coming back on.
We'll catch you soon. Brilliant.
That's it for today. We will be covering the Surface event tomorrow, so do check out all the news here on Double Tap. And, of course, follow us on social for all the latest as well. We'll bring you everything as it comes. And, of course, on Access Tech Live as well. You can find that over on AMI TV, also on YouTube and on AMI Plus. That is it for today, though. Sean Priest, as always, thank you.
Thank you, and bye-bye.